Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the West Covina Unified School District Board of Education. September 27th, 2011. It is 6:32 this evening. We call this meeting to order. We'll start this meeting before we go into closed session with public comment regarding closed session items. Is there anybody here? No? Okay. So we will then adjourn to closed session or go to closed session, and we will be back at approximately 7 o'clock. All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the West Covina Unified School District Board of Education, September 27th, 2011. We've returned from closed session and open session at 7:07. We'll start this evening with an invocation by Cami Polis. Please rise.
Dear Lord, please be with us this evening as we make decisions that affect the students and the staff of this district, and be with all of the students and have a special blessing on them this evening. In his name we pray. Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mr. Kopp?
Here.
Mrs. Miranda Jimenez?
Here.
Here.
Mrs. Polis? Here. Mr. Spence? Mr. Manahan? Here. Mrs. Kaplan? Here. Thank you. In closed session this evening, we have one action item, and that is the following action was taken in closed session September 27, 2000, with a subsequent action being reported in open session as required by law. It was moved by Eileen Miranda Jimenez and seconded by Cami Polis that the following student has completed his terms and conditions of expulsion has been approved by the Board of Education for readmit to the West Covina Unified School District, student number 187211, and the vote was 4-0 with Mr. Spence absent. And let the record show that Mr. Spence has joined us this evening. We have two presentations this evening.
Is Jeffrey Glickman here? The first one is for our hometown heroes. I'll just give a little introduction. We have had 40 Coronado and West Covina High School students were recently recognized for their volunteer work at both the Los Angeles County Fair Hometown Heroes Program and from the West Covina City Council. And I'd like to turn it over to you to share what our students were involved in.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to say that this is a great program. It involves teenagers from West Covina. And what's really remarkable about this is they come from all sectors of the city, from West Covina High School. We've had junior high school students involved, Coronado High School, and they continually work hard in a number of different endeavors just to make the community better. We're actually privileged because Megan, the student board member, is the head of youth council, and I'd actually like to turn it over to her since it is a student-driven organization. So, Megan.
Hello. I have been involved in youth council for 4 years now, and I've been privileged to serve on the board for 3 of those years. It has been so amazing to me to see how youth council has grown in both members and the activities we participate in every year. Our purpose is to gather students who want to be involved in the city and make an impact. And we just, our goal is to make West Covina a family-friendly and happy place to live. And to do this, we participate with the city in putting on summer lunch programs, summer movies in the park, holiday events, including but not limited to Martin Luther King Jr. celebrations, Halloween and Christmas tree lighting at the West Covina Mall, Easter festivities, and Valentine's Day card making for senior citizens involved in a food service that we put on. Recently, we've also expanded our reach to other cities where we serve at homeless shelters, participate in career cancer awareness walks, and it's such an honor to represent Youth Council tonight, and we thank you all so much for inviting us here and allowing us to show what we do. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We We have certificates for all students that you'll pass out for us. Mr. Fitzer, is he here tonight? Anybody from Merced? Well, we wanted to share that many of you know that Merced was recognized as a National Blue Ribbon School recently. It was one of 304 schools, national schools, and it was based on overall academic excellence as well as success in closing the achievement gap. And they will be honored in Washington, D.C., November 14th and 15th. It's very different than the way it was done before, and right now you really get the State Department of Education submits your name to the Secretary of Education, and then you're invited to fill out an application, but it really is looking at test scores and really looking at student achievement. And so we're very, very happy about Merced, and it really exemplifies the hard work that they have been involved with as all of our schools. And just a quote from Arne Duncan, that National Blue Ribbon Schools are committed to accelerating student achievement and preparing students for success in college and careers. And so we're very proud of their accomplishments. And
yes.
Sorry that they're not here tonight, so they
can't. All right. Congratulations to that and that program. All right. I have nothing to report this evening. Anybody, Board of Education report?
I just wanted to report at Lyons today. The Coach Maggiore came and gave a great presentation about the football team. And he also talked about how important academics was and how he really stressed that throughout his program. I was really impressed and proud to have him as part of our team. And I wanted to make sure that all of you knew what a great job he did representing our district.
I wanted to compliment the staff and teachers over at West Cove. They did a really good job. This is their second year in the Primary Learning Center, and the parents were excited. The community was excited. It ended at 7, but people were still there till 7:30. So I was really impressed, and I want to say how pleased I am with the progress they're making.
Well, just that Mrs. Paulson and I this morning were at the LACSA meeting that was in West Covina, or Covina, actually, because it was at the Radisson. Where they talked about workforce and needs of students and outcomes compared to other countries. So that was
interesting
as well. Yeah.
Thank you. Items from the floor. I have one request to address the board, Stephanie Broviak.
Okay. Hi. Good evening. I just wanted to say, when I was sitting parked across the street from my son's school, one of my boys' school today, and I was watching all the kids walk out the gate, I couldn't help but, you know, wonder what's going to happen to these kids and these schools, because I get really nervous that the reserves that we have seem to be pouring through people's fingers like water. You know, I feel like a lot of it is going away really fast. And I know that you as a board have the final say-so on this matter regarding the loan. I just feel that our students and our schools and our teachers and principals would all be hurt due to the poor planning of the leadership at San Jose, and I urge you all to think about the negative impact that some of this could have on jobs in the district. You know, our schools are already feeling the bite of budget cuts from the state, and now to freely be giving away money because people did not plan ahead and plan in advance, I feel that could have catastrophic effects on, you know, different employees in the district. So basically, I'm just asking you to think, you know, to think carefully and think about all the schools involved rather than just one.
Anybody else want to address the board at this time? Seeing none, we'll go on to the business session, organization approved agenda, and consent items. Any changes to the agenda?
I'd like to take off item 4.
Anybody else?
Item 3.
Remove item 3?
Yeah.
Anybody else? No. All right.
I don't have a problem putting 15 on, but.
I had, oh no, that's fine. That's the, take the 300 back. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem putting it on.
15?
No.
You want to talk about it? Or do you want it on consent?
I have one question.
Oh.
So.
That's fine.
All right. So we're talking the removal of items 3 and 4 up on the agenda. Is there a motion, please?
I'll move as amended.
Thank you. Been moved by Tammy Polis, seconded by Eileen Miranda Jimenez, to approve the agenda items as amended. Any objections? Motion passes 5-0. Takes us to number 3. This is Miranda Jimenez, please.
Okay. My question on 3, on page 3B, limits on the
boy.
Street.
B?
Yeah, 3B as in boy. Okay. I know, and on 3C, I know that we said that the, I'm sorry, 3C. If we can change the language to students can leave the district, because that falls in line, it still says may there. And then we have the may over on 3B on the very first sentence, the superintendent or designee may limit. And our whole intent was that if students wanted to leave, they were free to go. So that was my concern, is that it's still conveying that there's a possibility. We may keep you, you may go, when that wasn't the board intent with the policy. So it was, we can either put students can leave the district via inter-district permit as board policy. And then my other question was, can we simply just...
Them?
I'm sorry? My other question was, can we just simply even strike out limit on student transfers out of the district? Because, again, our policy is if students want to leave, they can leave. So if we can't just strike out that paragraph, then can we change the may still apply to just can? They can leave our policy.
It has that line on 3C. It has the irrespective part, right?
Students may still apply to leave the district.
Irrespective of the Ed Code section.
Yeah, it's irrespective of Ed Code section. Students may still apply to leave.
Okay.
And so my concern is that, you know, later
how
down
does it
the
can?
Line,
how
5 years
how
from
does
now. So my first question was, can we just strike that paragraph? I mean, students can leave. Do we even need to say that they may or may not, and then irrespective of this policy? But that, I don't know. If we can't, then...
Hi. The reason that it has the limits on student transfers is because that's Ed Code, and that has to be included in the policy, that there is an Ed Code provision where if a certain percentage of students leave your district, the superintendent then could put a stop by this Ed Code. But then on the next one, it says irrespective of that,
right. They
still may apply to leave. It doesn't say we put they still may apply, and the policy as we have it now, 5117, says they will be allowed to leave. So that's the reference to that board policy.
Okay. So my concern is, again, that it I know that our policy 5117 says they can leave, but it still leaves the impression here that, well, there's some flexibility. Maybe we will let you leave. Maybe we won't. And we were really clear that if you want to leave, you can go. We want you to stay, but if you want to go, you can go.
However you guys want me to rewrite it, I can rewrite
it. My only concern would be if the number of students leaving has a drastic effect on the district in terms of funding and jobs. You know, would you want to leave that flexibility in there? There are districts where so many students left that it had a major impact on running the district, and I don't know that you want to take that flexibility out of there.
I think our policy it just said you can go. Policy 5117. It didn't.
Well, see, I always use these sentences to apply to districts around us more than us, because I mean, if we're a district of choice, we're trying to get students in, not, you know, so I mean, and we already let students leave, so you know, to me it applies to districts around where they have the authority to limit rather than us.
Right.
I mean, I asked that last time.
Right.
Because to me it applied to superintendents of surrounding districts.
Right, and that it's the Ed Code, and that's why it's in there, and that was the suggestion from the county. And that's why the next sentence says, irrespective of that, we are going to let our students go. But I can change that however you'd like to do it.
I'm comfortable with the way it's written.
So am I.
Can we put the irrespective part maybe in front, the first sentence part? Or move it right in.
Oh,
move it into the middle of it or move it into one part of it? Yeah, or something like that.
I think the language before is setting up that last sentence.
I agree.
This is what will happen pursuant to the education code, which we have to follow. But we will still allow people to apply to leave, which is what the code calls for.
And if I was a parent who wanted to leave, you better believe I would look at the board policy 5117. So I think that the language is fine as it, because it does tell them where to go.
That's why I included it.
Yeah.
There, so.
Yeah. Okay, well, my suggestion was just came.
And our general board policy is students get to leave where district of choice, but there could at some point be a situation where we absolutely have to say, no, we have to stop, reassess what we're doing, and that's what this code calls for.
You come back and revisit it.
No, we would have to revisit our board policy, 5117.
5117.
Right.
That's what we'd revisit, not this.
Right.
I'm in the room.
Is there a motion on this item, please?
I'll second.
Moved by Jessica Shoemaker, seconded by Cami Polis, to adopt the following board policies: BPAR 5117.1, interdistrict attendance, open enrollment; BPAR 9110, regular and student members, terms of office. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Mr. Spence, item number 4, consultant services agreement. You had a question?
Well, yeah, and my question, I did get some of it answered. You know, it concerns, you know, we're going to spend some time talking about water conservation and then about helmet safety to Vine Elementary students. And there is the standards where it talks about safety equipment stuff, but, I mean, how many Vine students don't know you're supposed to wear helmets? I mean, I guess, how do you evaluate those standards that it's worth taking an hour out of the school day to tell kids not that they have to wear helmets on bikes compared to an hour on something where they aren't performing well at Vine? And so I guess that's, you know, that, I mean, how do you evaluate that? I mean, most kids know that you have to wear a helmet. They may not do it. And, you know, many kids don't ride bikes to school like they do anymore, like they used to. Partially because of that, but I'm just trying to figure out how do we evaluate that, okay, Vine students, for some reason, don't understand that they have to wear helmets and that it's worth taking time out of something where they're not meeting the standard somewhere else. I guess that's how I'm trying to figure out. And that's what I was talking to you about this morning.
Do you want to answer that? Or?
Do you want to talk about the standards first and then?
I can a little bit.
Ms. Fallon?
As I understand, PTA is sponsoring this event as part of Red Ribbon Week activities, and certainly the helmet safety is part of the whole presentation. But in addition to that, part of the health state standards that are closely integrated with physical education standards in the state also have key standards at every grade span. In terms of evaluating and making good decisions about behaviors that could be potentially dangerous, which I think extends beyond the helmet law and PE standards, but really into the health standards about practicing behaviors that generally are healthy and reduce risks. And I don't have an answer to your question about how they evaluate it before and after. I certainly can talk with the principal about that.
I mean, I don't have a problem, I guess. You know, I understand PTA is paying for this, but, you know, do kids that really don't know they're supposed to wear helmets? You know, I kind of think most kids do know they're supposed to wear helmets. And so, you know, if there's a few kids that don't, it would be easy to pull them aside and say, you know, you need to wear helmets rather than taking an hour out. I mean, that's just, I'm sure it's exciting, you know, because you have the BMX dirt guide riding around on a bike, but I'm just trying to figure out if that's the best use of that instructional time.
Eileen?
I have a question and then a comment. Thank you. The cost of the show wasn't listed. It was listed for D&E. I understand that PTA is going to cover it, and that's fine. But it wasn't listed, and it wasn't. So I was curious if we knew a cost. Maybe we didn't know a cost at the time of.
I believe it's at the bottom of the page. Find PTA.
That includes D&E. That's D&E. You know, that doesn't include G.
I believe I have that.
So, and those two total. D&E total, that 3560, 3,560. Okay, so.
Sorry. No cost.
Right, and these say no cost, and so does.
No cost to the district.
D&E say no cost to the district, but they do tell us how much. So I was curious if maybe we just didn't know price.
The one, I can give that to you. The one, the performing arts one, is 2,000.
Right, it's here. 60. D is right there, 2,060. And E is 1,500, and there's no cost to the district. And so that's what it stated very clearly to us. But G didn't state that. So I was curious, maybe if we just didn't have an amount by printing, maybe we have an amount now. And while you're looking, I can respond to the bicycle safety, and I can respond firsthand because my family just lived through this. And the issue isn't whether you're wearing a bicycle helmet or a skateboard helmet or not. It's how well you're wearing it. Because the number one reason for head injuries, as I heard from Dr. Inaba from the ICU team at LECUSC, is that people don't wear them properly. So they see so many instances, constantly, they see where students and adults are struck in an accident. They were wearing a helmet, but they just were not wearing it properly. It comes off on impact. So I actually would be very pleased, though I agree with Mr. Spence, that if there was some way of evaluating it. They said that you're supposed to wear a helmet very, very tight, and most people don't like to do that because it's uncomfortable. But that's the only way to protect your head. And then the other thing that they told us over there is that people use the wrong helmets. You've got kids on skateboards using biker helmets, kids on bikes using skateboard helmets, and so there's a lot of miseducation about helmets. So actually, to save a life, because my family just lived this and we're still living this, I think it's great.
How many kids ride
bikes?
To
answer your question, on the paperwork that was submitted by the school, it says there is no charge, but I will verify that in case someone put no charge to the school, but it's listed here as no charge.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to reiterate that, yes, helmet safety is one of the aspects of this assembly, but it also clearly says that it talks about doing well in school and brings a positive anti-drug message, which is exactly what Red Ribbon Week is. And so that may be part of why it's happening.
Do you want to separate the vote? Do you want to separate this vote out, Mike?
No, I'd still think, though, that it's worth evaluating how they get to – I mean, how many kids are riding bikes? You know, I mean, there may be other ways to get those other messages across that reach more kids than the few kids that ride bikes to school anymore.
I like that because, again, they're not wearing them properly. So if there was a way to evaluate that, I think that would be very effective for students and improve safety.
It's just not about school, though, right? Isn't it about their life? And because my nephew rides his bike finally to school, but they, for years, didn't ride their bikes. But that didn't mean after school, they weren't out there on the streets riding their bikes and trying not to wear their helmets. Mm-hmm.
See it all the time.
And if they can
see it all the time. Mm-hmm. Right.
I just
don't want to vote.
I just think Red Ribbon Week is a time to talk with students about making good decisions. And helmet is just one good decision, but also, looking at healthy decisions. So I think this may be the topic that they use to get into that deeper discussion, but it's really about how to make good decisions, like wearing a helmet, not taking drugs, and things like that. I think there's a bigger message.
I still think evaluation stuff is important with all this stuff, though, because they're taking time out of the classroom to do it.
All right, is there a motion on this item, please?
I'll second it.
Moved by Lynn Miranda Jimenez and seconded by Cammie Polis. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Item number 14, budget revisions.
Just the background is the budget is adjusted throughout the year to reflect increases and or decreases in state and federal funding from the adopted budget. Our last board meeting, we brought the unaudited actuals that had an impact on ending balances, which are reflected in this document. And if you have specific questions or want more specific information, Ms. Bastin would be happy to go through it.
Okay. I have a question. When since we had the cash flow sheet from San Jose Charter Academy, I wanted to compare the notes. And I had asked for ours, and I had compared the ones that you had given us back in March for ours. The ones that I had questions about, though, was on Fund 9 on page 14D. If you look at the cash flow charts that we have, the numbers are different, and they show more revenues, and they show less expenditures. I'm interested in looking at this because if that's let me just step back one moment. The expenditures on page 14G, they're saying that we're recognizing salary increases and books and supplies, things like that. So it's definitely increases that we're recognizing in their expenses. So if that's true, these differences could affect their ability to pay back or affect item number 16. So I would like to know which numbers are correct. Here it was they're saying they're having revenues of 8.1 million. We're saying 8 million. They're saying their expenses are 7.8 million, and we're saying they're 8.3 million, and that's a little over $600,000, which would make a difference in them paying back the loan or not. So I'm just trying to figure out.
Sure. First, you're looking at two different documents that are based on different timing. A cash flow is truly cash in your hand, or actually expenditures that you're making. The budget isn't based on that. So an example like the revenue may be less than your cash flow because that reflects all the deferrals. In the budget here, what you see is the actual revenue earned, including the deferrals. So there'll be a big difference because of those deferrals. Expenses are the same way. You incur your payroll during the month, but you may not pay it to the first of the following month. In a budget, you see the accrual effect, where it was earned, and on a cash flow, you see where it's paid. So again, we're accounting for everything, but they're two different documents from two different accounting points of view.
Okay.
So on cash flow, your revenue is going to be lower because of those deferrals.
Okay.
And then it's same thing with expenses. You show that expense when it's payable as a budget item, but you may not pay that. In the case in some of the items here, we do have some deferred expenses that we've asked to do in the cash flow that wasn't taken into account during the budget time.
Okay, I appreciate that, and I was wondering if that was going to be the explanation. Mm-hmm. What I want to make sure is that the items on 14G were all, they're in their increases in expenditures, they're all reflected on their cash flow then, correct? Have they recognized everything that we're recognizing, all of these changes, as of this document? Because it's changed since we originally published it back in July.
Correct. A couple things are happening. A big part of the reason where you find this budget revision is from the carryovers. So restricted funds that have not spent are carried over into the next year. That's like within our own budget, why we have like $2 million additional ending fund balance. It's because the restricted dollars that weren't spent need to be budgeted into the next year, regardless if you think you're going to actually spend them or not. You need to come up with a plan for them. So they're in the budget. If we don't budget for them, then we're recognizing that we will never spend them, and then those revenues need to be returned. So in the case of the charter school here, where it shows we have an increase of $301,000 in the beginning, that's the fund balance, Fund 9. not their ending fund balance that we talk about.
Okay.
And again, most of that's the rollover dollars. And specifics, what will happen with restricted or unrestricted dollars, San Jose would probably be best to speak about that in detail. But when these are ARRA dollars, we're expecting to spend them by September 15th. They're rollover dollars. We want to add them to the budget. And a specific plan how to spend them is probably best spoken to from San Jose's point of view.
I'm still not sure. What I want to know is their increases in salaries are reflected in this document. Just yes or no.
Okay. The budget doesn't have a direct correlation to the cash flow. So these are additional dollars that may be rolled over.
Does this adequately reflect their salaries?
To the best of my knowledge, it does.
Okay. That was my question.
Is best from San Jose.
And the books and supplies.
Okay, so the issue is, I mean, the question with respect to the disparity between the numbers as shown in the budget versus this cash flow projection, we understand the differentiation with a timing issue.
Right.
The recognition of income, the recognition of expenses, and the actual cash flow relating to those. Okay, so got that straight up. Can we move on with the budget revision issue? Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm confused because I understand talking about cash flow, but our first column says 2011 to 12 budget. And so I understand all of these numbers may be different, but in terms of the budget, this says our Fund 9 budget. This is their budget. Why don't they match up?
It's a point in time in processing. So this is probably ties back to their original budget, and this is a budget revision that's not included here because it's not been.
But it isn't. I tried to match it up to their original budget, and it didn't match up to their original budget either.
Mr. Yoder, would you like to address this question? And please share who you are and your connection with San Jose so our board understands.
Good evening. My name is Carl Yoder. I work for DMS. We're the back office service provider that's been retained by San Jose to handle business services, accounting, payroll, budgeting, etc. We've been working closely with the district staff and with San Jose's staff on these cash flows and these issues. In terms of the issue that you had raised, it doesn't make any difference to cash flow because it's all moving money from last year into this year. But in terms of your question, there is a difference between the budget that was in our cash flow and this most recent budget. The budget in the cash flow was the latest budget that we understood had been provided to the district. And it's outdated, but we didn't want to throw a new budget at you. And the budget that's in the September 27th update is newer than the one here. So the changes that are discussed in the budget revisions are just moving money from one year to another. But it is correct to say that the financial situation here is slightly different than the financial situation presented in this budget update. However, the differences aren't substantial enough to cause an issue in the next several months with cash flow. Does that answer your question?
It does, but I continue to not understand why our numbers don't match up. And then my next question is, where in the budget revisions, this question won't be for you, it will be for Ms. Bastin. It doesn't show the $600,000 that left our, went to Edison as a loan. Why is that? Or is it in here somewhere?
First $600,000 did not go to Edison. It was
Charter Academy.
A cash advance on the funds for the charter to fund payroll. Those dollars, again, it's cash flow, it's not an expense, that's not budgeted, and it's already been repaid. So we're looking for normal.
Has it been repaid?
It's already, the $600,000 has already come back to the district.
Where is it sitting? Maybe that'll be the next question, that's.
And the Charter Fund 9, so again, it was advanced on the receivables. So when we process it, when the state actually paid, it would have been too late to be able to make their payroll. So we were able to make a vendor payment to the charter school, San Jose, for the $600,000. And then the state gave us the funding for that, which normally came in about the first part of September, I think the first, the second. And so that money's sitting there in the Charter Fund 9 in our district fund that we are earning interest on. So it's already came back. It was a timing difference of a few days from the time that they needed funds to be able to have it in their bank to issue payroll and the timing of the state actually giving us those funds.
Okay, because our next item is going to be to approve an interfund transfer. And when I look at the budget revisions here, there's nothing under interfund transfers in or out to reflect that money went out of account regardless of whether or not it's approved to come back in.
Okay.
And so why isn't that reflected?
Again, you're looking at a cash balance, not expenses. So we're not budgeting to loan them money or to have that going onward, so it's not an expense, so it's not in your budget. It's a cash balance. And like I said, the state funded, gave them their normal funding, which came in the beginning of September. That's a charter fund, so it went to Charter Fund 9. We issued a payment to San Jose out of Fund 1, and only the board can transfer between funds. And that's why you have a board agenda item, and that money's sitting there in Fund 9 waiting to be transferred back to the General Fund 1.
And it wouldn't show up on Fund 9, is what you're saying on our, on this form. It's not going to show up anywhere.
It kind of to step away from the district and think about just normal budgeting, so your own household budgeting. You have money for your rent, for food, for utilities, all right? And you have a budget item for your income.
Okay,
now, in your bank account, that money, you have a budget for revenue, but that money may not be in there at a point in time. That's a cash item. But that doesn't affect your budget that you're going to get that money, that you budgeted in anticipation of getting those funds. So you're looking at cash, which is the issue with the San Jose advance compared to budget. Budget's what we plan to spend and do. We may or may not even spend that money. We may or may not even receive that money. It's a projection for the future, what we plan and anticipate to happen. Cash flow is really the money in the bank, and that they're two different items.
How was the money transferred to Edison?
Money wasn't transferred to Edison.
It
was payment. Just to clarity, which is a very good question, because I think there's a lot of confusion, and I appreciate the question. So a payment was made to San Jose Edison as a vendor from General Fund 1 through the normal process that we just send all warrants. Those came to the board for approval, and you approved those at the last board meeting.
How did the $600,000 mm-hmm. go from our bank accounts, Fund 1 is what I'm understanding,
the fund nine.
To the charter school?
A vendor payment was issued to San Jose Edison through the LEGO PeopleSoft software as a vendor payment to them for the $600,000. It went through the same process as every other vendor payment, LEGO review, issuing those funds. Instead of a hard check, there was an electronic payment made that they received in late August for those dollars amount. So the payment was made through a vendor payment.
How was it made as a vendor payment when it was not a vendor payment? It was a cash advance.
The payment was made to them. We gave them money and to fund the payroll. And it was made. You asked how it was transferred. I'm answering your question. It was made as a vendor payment. So there's a complete audit trail, so it goes through the same process as any other payment and comes to you for ratification like other vendor payments.
Except it wasn't a vendor payment. Okay.
So Mr. Spence?
Well, I had the same question dealing with the cash flow budget, and I understand the difference between a budget and cash flow, but the document here that we have with 4D was created on 9/21, right? 9/21, that's what it says at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
2 days later is when we had the cash flow that includes the different budget numbers, you know, cash flow for a different budget number, right? And that was the day we got a board packet. And then this says this is the revised budget as of September 27th, 2011. That's what it says in the thing. It really should say that's the revised budget of September 22nd, or the number should have matched the one on the 23rd, which was the day our packet was prepared, and should have matched this budget. Does that not make sense?
You can understand this portion is the cash flow. This portion, they had to have a starting budget. It says budget down
there.
Yeah,
I mean, you don't know you have a cash flow problem if you don't have a budget.
Right.
You have to have some kind of budget. And so I guess that's my question is, we're not really approving a revised budget on September 27th. We're really approving it on September 22nd or 21st.
Well,
because these numbers are different than that we got on the 23rd, which they think is DMS, whatever, thinks that's the most current budget that we got. And that's why it was included in our Friday packet.
Okay. First we need to kind of separate the two things. The DMS or San Jose budget and, the projections and their cash flow compared to the budget that we're bringing to revision for approval. This is as of September 27th. That's how we date it. It would be the board approval date, not the day we came up with the numbers. So that's why it's dated the 27th.
What about the bottom
based
date?
On, I'm sorry?
The 9/21.
That's
isn't
the date
that the time you ran it?
Revised budget as of 9/21 was the last time we came to with a revised budget. So what we're showing you here is the original adopted budget, the last revised budget, and today what we're bringing to you to be revised again.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between August 9th and September 27th. What you see at the bottom, I think you're referring to, the 9/21 day step at the bottom, 9/16. Is that what you guys are referring to?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, we have to prepare all this in advance. So, again, date the budget revisions based on the board date so we can keep track of them, not when we prepare the worksheets. These may be done weeks in advance to come to you to make sure we can proof it. It goes through revisions.
Mm-hmm.
The San Jose DMS projections were for the budget at the time, and they've been working on this for some time. So we don't want to give them a budget that's not approved yet by the board as a working item. They're working off the last approved budget should be.
That's right. Well, those numbers don't match the revised budget, though, either.
Mm-hmm.
They don't match the revised budget as of August 9th. I mean, if we look at the total expenditures, it doesn't match the revised budget as of August 9th, which was the last time we revised their budget. Correct?
Correct. We're looking at the sheet here.
So they did not use the August 9th. They used the most correct numbers. Now, I don't have a problem with using the most correct numbers as far as their budget, but it doesn't make any sense that it's not the budget that's approved by us on the 27th or the 21st or whatever. That's what doesn't make sense to me.
Correct.
Which
should be
correct.
Based on one of those, and
yeah, it's not
on any of them.
And the cash flow isn't based on either the August 9th nor the one we're asked to approve today. That was printed out on the 21st.
I can. It's a good question. The budget that we used in the cash flows was the budget that we pulled off the district's escape system, added up all of the revenues and expenditures, and took that as the most current budget. That was in the current budget column. In this discussion, it appears that the numbers that were in the escape budget weren't the most recent approved budget, and so we would need to update accordingly with this September 27th most recent revision.
Well, and your chart was prepared 2 days later, so you may actually have the correct numbers.
Well,
that's
yeah, but it wouldn't be reflected as the revised budget here. That's what I'm saying. To say this is the revised budget of the 27th when we're actually using a different budget on the 23rd,
is
kind of doesn't make sense to me.
Part of it is a timing issue, and we started preparing this cash flow a week and a half ago or so. We wanted to make sure, ironically, that we weren't dumping too many different budget versions on the district board at the same time.
Oh, okay,
but we weren't aware.
That didn't work.
That this September 27th update contained an updated budget coming to you for approval tonight, or we would have included it in the cash flows. So we can update, but we worked off the most recent information available to us.
Yeah, because, we'll talk about this when it gets later, but it does impact your cash flow. Mm-hmm. Because this revised budget that we're asked to approve here is, $200,000 or so greater than the budget that's in here. And so
over $600,000 difference.
And so, well, no, the well, from the revised. But I'm talking about from the one where it has to approve.
Yes, from the revised.
Yeah, from.
Because that's what I was.
But the one on September 27th. And so, that's where I'm kind of confused. If we're asked to approve this budget as of September 27th, it seems to me that's the budget that should have been used to figure out the cash flow, not a different one on the 23rd that's not the same as the one on at least August 9th. I mean, that's just.
The increase to the expenditures are revenues that were already accounted for in the prior year. That's part of the receivables. So while you can't reflect increase in revenue because there is no new revenue coming in, your expenditures will reflect an increase. But then when you see your interim report, you always see prior year beginning balance, and that's a reflection of the difference. So,
yeah, well,
does
and we'll
that
talk
make
about
sense?
The prior year stuff when we get to the item, because that's
nope.
a big question of mine. But we do have here the starting of the 2011-12 budget, and
right, but you don't include any receivables or
it's not included
payables.
In there.
But you
it's
carry
not included
over
on this cash flow.
No, but I thought you were talking about the Fund 9 on the...
Yeah, I'm looking at if you exclude, which this does, because it doesn't have the numbers for prior year accounts receivable and cash flow loan. It does at the end of the year, but if it looks at the 2011-12 budget, look at the first page of cash flow, it says the total cash inflows is $8,185,238.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is that correct?
Right.
And if you look at the cash flow... If you look at the two numbers that we have before us, the one run on 9/21, September 27th is $8,090,488,000, and the revised budget as of August 9th is $7,895,567. So neither one of those numbers matches what you have as the 2011-12 budget listed here. And so, I mean, that's the question when we're asked to approve that. I mean, that's kind of... Now, if you pull that off of Escape on the 23rd, it's all possible you pulled it off on the 23rd, but,
no.
You know, this is not the revised budget as of the 27th. It would have to be the revised budget as of the 21st.
It wasn't pulled off on the 23rd. It was pulled off about 2.5 weeks ago, and that's been the budget and the cash flow ever since. I can say in terms of the changes in the budget, between the August and the September update, when they're moving things from last year to this year, that won't change the cash flow because any of those deferred revenues and deferred expenditures haven't changed. So cash, as Dawn had said earlier, is going to remain the same. There is an issue remaining, however, between the difference in the budget shown here and the budget that's before the board for approval tonight.
Well, and there's a huge difference in expenditures. According to our revised budget here, expenditures will be $8,391,719. According to your budget, it's $7,800,000.
That includes expenditures carried over from last year, things that were already agreed upon last year.
That's not what it shows.
It doesn't. That's not what it shows. The cash flow doesn't show that. It does at the end. It doesn't at the beginning. We're talking about the first column of the cash flow.
Right. Our budget includes what was in Escape and did not take over the results of the unaudited actuals that brought over deferred revenues and deferred expenditures, which is the reason for the budget update. So because those are not included, they were assumed to be in 10-11. If both of those are moved over, all of them are going to come in, they're going to change prior year receivables and payables. The total dollar amount going out is not going to change. Again, it's two different issues going on. There is a budget update that needs to take place, but the issue of moving money from last year into this year as a result of completing the unaudited actuals won't change the cash flows because you're also moving revenues and expenditures from last year into this year.
And that's accounted for in the total for the year in the cash flow. I mean, that's where you have the revenues and the expenditures accounted for
right.
the prior year, which we'll get to when we get to this item. But, to stick to this particular item, I'm a little confused on... You know, I guess if we were approving a revised budget as of 9/21, that makes sense to me. But if you did this 2.5 weeks earlier, then it's even a little more confusing. Because then the numbers changed in that 2.5 weeks to become that number. So I'm a little confused on why we wouldn't be using these numbers as part of the budget rather than the ones from 2.5 weeks ago.
You know what? Before you go on here, I'm going to take a timeout. I want to just address the issues before us. Right now, we're on item number 14, a budget revision. Do we want to approve this budget revision? It has nothing to do with the report that was prepared regarding item number 15 or 16.
Well, this it does, because it calls into question whether or not the
These
budget revisions in front of us are correct.
Okay. Are the numbers that are presented to us on page 14, encompassed 14, are those accurate?
Yes.
Anybody have any reason to believe that the items presented on pages 14, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and the explanations on those pages are inaccurate and that we should not approve this budget revision?
Well, I have that question
Why
about
until
D.
We had this?
Because if this was created 2 days afterward.
Yeah. Item D?
Yeah, 14D.
Okay. So what about 14D do you believe is incorrect?
Well, if they got these numbers off Escape that they're using for cash.
No, no. We're not talking about that report. We're talking
about.
Well,
you asked me how I would know that the numbers.
No, item 14D is the, let's look at the first column then. The operating budget presented on July 1st, 2011 is representative of, the budget that we have going. Is there anything wrong with the operating budget presented July 1st, 2011, and the numbers that are presented on these financial statements?
Yes. Where did that number come from?
The July 1st, 2011.
No, I don't have a question about the July or the August.
No, I'm on the July 1st, 2011 numbers. Is that the approved operating budget as of July 1st, 2011?
I'm sure that probably was. I don't question the July
is
or
it,
the August.
I mean, because otherwise we can take a break. We can determine in various whatever reports that we want to determine to come to some reason to believe that it is accurate.
July and August, I'm not questioning.
July and August is not. Okay, now we're coming to
September
27th. Now is basically the difference between what is presented in the narrative explanation, right, that explains all of the differences in the final column?
That is correct.
Okay. So.
But there has to be numbers floating out there somewhere else if they've taken these numbers.
No, we're not looking at that. That's not part of this discussion. What we're looking at is, are we satisfied that the column that reads, the second column, revised budget as of August 9th, 2011, is that an accurate depiction of the budget as presented and approved as of August 9th, 2011?
I don't think anyone's questioned those numbers.
Okay, great. So the difference of the balance between the $22,501,000, federal revenue on fund one, restricted, the balance was $3,623,495. The budget difference of $209,000 and $2,749 is represented on page I can't do the numbers in my head.
F and G.
E, unrestricted. E, F, and G $209,749 on page 8 to recognize an increase of $209,749 in federal revenue related to deferred revenues. $209,000, that's that difference. Does anybody have any question as to how we arrived at $209,749 difference?
You're
not. No? Huh? I'm on fund one. First of all, let's start on page 14A. The difference between August 9th and September 27th. The first line item is the beginning balance. We'll skip that one. Go to the next one. It's revenue limit. There's no difference. The difference between $3,623,495,000 and $3,833,244 is $209,409. If you flip back to page F, Fund 1, Restricted General Fund, this budget budget change is explained as to recognize an increase of $209,749 in federal revenue related to deferred revenues. Is that an accurate depiction of the difference between those two columns? Does anybody have any question on that?
No.
None. Okay. So now we're going to go down to the next line item, other state revenue, $12,184,379. The difference of $10,857 between that and the budget revised budget as of September 27, 2011 of $12,194,966 is $10,857, which is depicted on, somebody help me, I don't, is that?
It's a combination.
Okay, would you explain those combination of, go ahead. We'll just reconcile this thing through the whole, you know.
Well, that's different than the
Mike,
question you asked.
Mike, I said, what did I say, 8:30 to 9, something like that?
That's different than the question you asked, though.
No, I'm just trying to determine whether or not.
You asked if we had any reason to believe that the numbers are different.
Well,
I know that they're different.
And I can answer, yes, I believe there may be numbers that are different because if we have a different budget floating around for Fund 9, who knows what's going on with the rest of our accounts.
No, we'll get to Fund 9 in just a minute. We're going to go through Fund.
So that's the answer for every single page. I don't know because if this is wrong. Okay. What is going on with the rest of our budget?
Okay.
Mr. Cox, to go down these and easily find them on the page, the second page, 14B, is the unrestricted, and then 14C is restricted, and we can match them up to the narrative quicker if we go down those pages.
Which pages?
Oh, yeah.
So we've already established that we accept as accurate the operating budget on July 1st, 2011.
You accept as accurate. I do not.
Oh, okay.
We don't have the information here.
All right, can we, then we'll take a break.
This is wrong.
Can we go back to, can you then go back to whatever budgets, reports, whatever we did, in the minutes going back to, or the that we need to prove to the board that column one is an accurate depiction of the operating budget as of July 1st, 2011 for all of the funds that are presented, including Fund 9?
Yes, if we can take a break, we'll grab those.
Okay, would you do that? We'll be back in about 10 minutes.